The area of halacha that we will discuss in this shir is referred to in the Gemara and in the Poskim and the various responsa throughout the ages as ani hamahapech b'charora. An ani, a poor person that is pursuing a charora, a biscuit, a cookie. And the Gemara that's referenced, this is referring to a Gemara in Kedushin Daf Nun Tesam and Aleph, and we'll learn the Gemara together. There's certain things that have to be uncovered from this Gemara, but the basic concept of Ani Hamahapech B'Charor is that if there's a person that's pursuing a specific deal, pursuing a purchase, pursuing an employee, or is already engaged in a relationship with another individual, in a business relationship with another individual, in a way that has not been consummated, or it could be broken at any time. And another individual comes and goes ahead and tries to steal away and to take the deal from under his feet, that is considered ani amahapich b'charora. And the Gemara in Kedushin says as follows. Rav Gidol have a mahapich b'ahi ara. Rav Gidol was engaged in pursuing a specific land that he wanted to purchase. Ozel Rav Abba Zovna. Rav Abba went ahead and he jumped ahead of Rav Gidol. And before Rav Gidol had a chance to close on the deal, Rav Abba went ahead and purchased the property. Ozel Rav Gidol went to the Chachamim and he said, they said, Oni hamahapich b'charora uba'achar v'notla mimenu. If a person, a poor person, mahapach, he's pursuing a charora, and somebody else comes and grabs it and takes it before the ani has the chance to actually get the charora, that person, the person who jumped in front, is considered a rasha. He's an evil and a wicked person. Asks the Gemara the obvious question. How can Rab Abba, who was a great sage, a tzaddik, how can he do such a thing? How can he jump in front of Rav Gidol? Omar Leiloi Haviyadana. I didn't know. Rav Abba said, I didn't know that Rav Gidol was pursuing this property. Of course I would have stayed away. Now, I own the property. I already closed on the property. What do we do now? Says the Gemara, so why don't you just sell it back to Rav Abba? The Gemara says, it's not like masimna milsa. It's not a good omen. It's not a good simen to sell the first piece of real estate, the first property that you purchase in your life. It's kedai to hold on to. It's a simen toiv to hold on to that property. A very interesting concept, a very interesting aloha that many people don't know. The first property that a person owns, it's a simna milsa. It's a good omen to hold on to that property. So the Gemara continues. Or at least not to sell it. We'll see in a minute. The Gemara continues, why don't you just transfer it over to Rav Gidol? Give it to him as a gift. So the Gemara says that Rav Gidol was not ready to accept it because Soinim Atanas Yichya, a person who hates presents, who does not appreciate handouts, he's the person who will live. And therefore, the Gemara says that Rav Gidol was not ready to accept this gift from Rav Abba. So what do we do? They didn't know what to do. They went back and forth until the Gemara concludes that they made this land an Arad Rabbanon. It remained under the ownership of Rav Abba. Rav Gidol didn't want to take it as a gift. Rav Abba didn't want to sell it. So they made it into a public domain, into the property of the Rabbanon. This Gemara is clear. Now, let's analyze. The Gemara says, Ani hamahapach, Ani, a poor person that's going after a charara. Rashi on the side says, what type of charara, what type of biscuit was this? It was a charara shel hefker. It was something that was ownerless. The Ani was on his way to grab this ownerless cookie that was lying on the floor and somebody else grabbed it and took it for himself. He's considered a rasha. Taisus asks from different places in Shas. Rabbeinu Tam says a very interesting stipulation in this halacha. The entire halacha of ani amahapach b'charora is merely when we're not talking about hefker. Rabbeinu Tam argues on Rashi. when it's hefker, when it's ownerless, when this exact deal is such a deal that cannot be gotten, and cannot be gotten hold of in a different circumstance, a different scenario, a davishal hefker. It's not every day that you find a cookie on the floor, you find a mitzia on the floor. Says Rabbeinu Tam, if there's a mitzia, if there's something that's ownerless, and you can get this entire article, this entire deal, in a way that's free, and such a deal does not exist anywhere else, says Rabbeinu Tam, in that case, no. You are allowed to go ahead and grab the deal. You're allowed to circumvent and go in front of the person who's pursuing the deal and wrench it away from him, because this deal can't be gotten anywhere. The entire din of Ani Mahabich Becharorah is such that we tell the buyer, there are so many deals out there. There's so many pieces of real estate to purchase. Why do you have to purchase the one that he is pursuing? Go find a different one. You'll find plenty of deals out there to purchase. However, in a case where this is the only deal that's around, this has a very special situation that you cannot find this deal anywhere else. It's a mitzia, it's hefker, it's something that cannot be found. In that case, there would be no isser, there would be no problem of ani mahapech b'charora. We paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. We paskin that the only time there's a din of ani mahabich pecharora is only if it's a purchase or a rental. That there's many purchases and many rentals. Some are better deals, some are worse. Go find a different deal. There's so many deals out there. Go get them. But in a case where this is a davar miyuchad, where this is a once in a lifetime chance, in that case you are allowed to pursue it and go get it. The Mordechai stretches this halacha, this shita, this opinion of Rabbeinu Tam even further, and he says that not only is it only an ownerless item, but anytime there's a very strong, significant reason why you want bedafki, you want only this property, it's considered a mitzia, and there's no din of ani mahapech b'charora. And the case that he's referring to is a case where Reuven was negotiating with the seller to purchase a property. Shimon lived next door. Says Shimon, I would like to purchase the property, and he approaches the seller and wrenches the deal away from Reuven. Says the Mordechai, in that case, according to Rabbeinu Tam, there would be no Isser, because we know it's brought down in Halacha and Simin Kofai and Hey in Chayshan Mishpat, as well as a Sugi in Bava Metzia, that there's a concept of Bar Metzra. It's definitely beneficial for every person who owns real estate to have the neighboring property right next to you. You can always combine them. You can make a field out of it. You can maybe get different variances, building permits. It's always beneficial to have two properties next to one another. So, in the event that the person who's encroaching, the lokeach, is getting a deal that's really a once in a lifetime. It's a very special deal because it's right next door. There will be no Isser of Ani Mahabich B'Charora. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe takes this to a very interesting concept. He has a fascinating tshuva about a young man who was dating a girl, and they were holding pretty far into the dating process, and they were getting closer and closer to possibly getting engaged. And the question came up that there was another bachar, a young man who thought that this would be a good shidduch for him, and he wanted to suggest a shidduch and really go after the girl and see if maybe it would be a match for him as well. And the shaila was brought to Rav Moshe Feinstein, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, based on the Mordechai, based on Rabbeinu Tam, that if there was no, before the engagement, we're still in the dating process, there was no agreement between the kala and the chosin to go ahead and make the engagement, then there would not be an isra of ani mahabich b'charora. He would not be considered a rasha if he would go and pursue the girl, because a girl, a shidduch that is a possible match, is hard to find. It's once in a million. It's once in a lifetime. We hope that each bas pliny l'pliny, there's one person who's predestined to marry his zivug, and therefore It's considered a metzia, it's considered a davishal hefker, and therefore he would be allowed to pursue it. Rav Moshe actually splits it up into different levels. He says that before the agreement, before she agrees to go ahead with the shidduch, then it would be mutter, it would be totally permissible for him to circumvent and to jump in and try to see if it's a possibility for him as well. Once she agreed, although there's an agreement, there's a meeting of the minds, as we'll soon see, the exact stipulations of this din of Arei Mahabech B'Charar, but once there's an agreement between her, also it's mutter. Even if she agreed to get engaged and to get married to this person, she verbally agreed, but there was no tenoyim, there wasn't any official proclamation. In that case, it would also be mutter. Says Rav Moshe, that even though, according to Rabbeinu Tam, like we were mentioning, there would be no concept of Arei Mahabech B'Charar because this is considered a find. But he says that in that case, a Yarei Shemayim, somebody who, again, who has faith in Hashem and believes that everything is predestined, should not go after such a thing, which is an eye-opener in the entire concept of Arei Mahabech B'Charar. And this tshuva is used in many Dinei Torah, that we tell the person who's pursuing the deal, who's trying to take the deal away, it might be mutter, it's mutter al pi alocha. Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that even though it's mutter al pi alocha, according to Rabbeinu Tam, because we paskin, we go with Rabbeinu Tam's position that metzia is mutter. But Rav Moshe Feinstein says that a Yorei Shemayim is choshesh and is worried and tries to adhere to Rashi as well. And therefore, even in a case where it is a metzia, where it is something that can be gotten, it's once in a lifetime, Yorei Shemayim should be choshesh and should be machmir and should be stringent like Rashi as well, and therefore he should stay away. Another question that comes up is when it's not exactly a metziah. It's not something that's free and that's something that can't be found elsewhere, but it's something that's very cheap. It's a purchase that's considered to be a very, very good deal. Is that considered a metziah or not? There's a machlokes amongst the poskim in this regard, but even on the tzad, the marshal brings down, and the mishpat shalom brings the b'shem the marshal, that even in a case where it's cheap, and if you would go with the poskim that hold that where it's cheap, that also would be mutter, but that's only when it's very significantly cheap. It's something that's can't be found anywhere else in the world, and in that case, it might have a din of a metziah, in which Rabbeinu Tam would say that in that case you could pursue it, and we pass on like Rabbeinu Tam that you would be able to pursue such a deal that's very, very cheap, that's a double mafursim, that everybody who sees this deal says that this is something that you cannot possibly get anywhere else, and there might be a heter to go ahead and pursue that deal as well. Now, when we talk about mahapech, ani mahapech b'charora, we discuss somebody who's actively pursuing a deal. What level of pursuit do we have to stay away? There's obviously a tremendous disadvantage here for a seller. If any time one person steps into the arena, so to speak, everybody else has to stay away, that puts the meicher, the seller, at a tremendous disadvantage. He puts his property up for sale. One person enters into negotiation, and everybody else has to stay away. The most poskim maintain that the only time there's the iser to engage and to go after a specific property that is already under the negotiation is only when the negotiation has already come to the level of a pisuk damim. There's already a specific dollar amount that's agreed upon between the buyer and the seller, and there's a verbal agreement that I will sell this to you, even before contract, before we took the next step, before attorney review, before we took any steps into actually going forward with the deal. But as soon as the buyer and the seller agree to buy this property and to sell this property at a specific price, At that point, there's a isra of ani mahapech b'charara. There's a din of that if somebody else comes at that point and tries to take the deal away, he's considered a rasha. He's considered an evil and a wicked person. The prisha, however, he takes it one step earlier. The prisha says it doesn't have to be an actual verbal agreement, but at any point where there's a meeting, where there's a underlying understanding that we're close enough to a deal that if somebody else doesn't come, we'll definitely close on the deal. In that case, there would be, according to, says the Prisha, there would be a concept of Ani Mahapech Becharora as well. It doesn't have to be that we actually agreed. There could be many loose ends. But if there are loose ends that typically, at this point, would get ironed out in a favorable manner, and the only reason why it's not being ironed out is because somebody else is going to come in and give a better deal. At that point in negotiation, says the preacher, there would also be the concept of Ani Mahabich Becharora, and if somebody would jump in at that point, he would also be considered a Rasha. Now, what is the extent of the prohibition? What is the extent of the Isser of Ani Mahabich Becharora? We mentioned in previous shiurim that there's different levels of prohibition. Sometimes it's mutter, it's permissible. Sometimes the Yari Shemaim should not do it. Sometimes it's considered gezel midivrayim. By Ani Mahabich Becharora, there's no choshen mishpat obligation. Once a person made that purchase, he transgressed the concept of Ani Mahabich Becharora. It's not gezel. What he did is valid. His purchase is valid, and he could go further. The Bezdin will not tell him to turn over the contract to the original person who was pursuing the deal. However, he is called a Rasha. He's called a evil and a wicked person, and the Poskim speak out that it's incumbent upon the Gabbai in the shul, when this person walks in to shul on the next Shabbos morning, he should get up by the bima and give a clap on the bima and say that this individual is a Rasha. He's considered a Rasha, and it's incumbent upon the people to know that he's a Rasha because he did a Maisa Rishus. He did something that's terrible. Now, how do you undo that? So, Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva says that even though there's no obligation for you to give it back, but if you want to take off your title of Rasha, and you want to take off that pen name, that surname, so the only way to do it is to turn over the contract or to negotiate and to settle with the original person. It means you don't have a chaysha mishpat, a obligation that has recourse and that could be enforced in Bezdin. However, if you want to get rid of your status as Rasha, then you have to return it over and you have to make good and undo what you have done. The Mishpat Sholem says in the name of the Gois Maimonides that since he's considered a Rasha, and it's considered a Rasha de Chamas, a person who is considered a Rasha when he pursues deals and business ventures that are not alpi Torah, so a person who would be mahabich b'charora would be pasul la'edus, and if he would be called up to be an aide on the kedushin, on the marriage of a person in the community, it's very possible that at least midrabbanan he would be considered pasul la'edus, and the kedushin would not be valid midrabbanan midraisa. It might be valid, but he definitely would be in their best interest to do the kedushin again. He would be pasul shvua if he would be obligated to swear. We would not give him the opportunity to take an oath because he's considered a Rasha de Chamas, and he is considered somebody who would give up his values of his. He would agree to become a Rasha in order to for his pursuit of monetary acquisition. So it's obviously a very chomer. It's something that's very should not be taken lightly. Another question that the Poskim deal with is what happens if there's a few people that are negotiating. There's Reuven and Shimon. Reuven gives an offer, Shimon gives another offer. Finally, Levi, the third person, agrees with the seller, and now Reuven, who was the first person to negotiate, wants to go in and try to get the deal and wrench it away from Levi. Is that also a prohibition? Most Poskim are of the opinion that yes, that is also a problem, even though he started the negotiation and he put in the first bid. But since his bid was not accepted, but rather Levi's bid was accepted, and even though we're before the Kenyan stage, or we haven't even gone into contract, but since there's an agreement between the buyer and the seller, so any other buyers have to stay away from this. One heter, one leniency in this halacha is the Yamshel Shloima, brings down the fact that if the moicher, if the seller were to come to you, still looking for the possible client, still looking to take the deal further, even after he agreed to sell it to somebody else, if the moicher is still actively pursuing other buyers, so in that case you are allowed to accept to purchase it at a better price and to take the deal away from that other person. It's only the only issur, the problem, the prohibition is only for other buyers to go and try to take the deal away. But if the seller is still actively looking for the potential buyers, then he's then you would be allowed to take the deal and sign on the deal and take the deal away from the other buyer. There are more in Shin Pei Vav, and it's brought down by the Sma as well, says just one clarification, that this whole halacha is only if they haven't agreed to a din. The only time where it's only a rasha and the bezin does not enforce is only when they haven't agreed to anything. But if if there had been an agreement already, even if it's an agreement that could be broken, or that is an agreement with a non-Jew who's ready and he's ready, willing and able to break this deal, if you would take the deal away at that point, then it would be worse than a rush, and Bezin would get involved and say that you shouldn't do it. There are many places that maintain that it's Bezin's obligation, even though after the fact, after the Russia did his Maisa Rishus, and he went ahead and he took away the deal from the other buyer, Bezin will not undo what has been done, and Bezin will allow the deal and allow the property to sit by the purchaser. However, it would, if this issue was brought to the attention to the Bezin before the Russia did what he did and he took away the deal, Bezin would get involved and convince him and discourage him and even not prohibit him from pursuing the deal in the lechatchila stage. It's only b'di'evit, after the fact, when the deal is already purchased by the wrong person, then Bezin does not undo it, and then he gets the classification as Russia. And in order for him to take away his classification as Russia, he has to do tshuva and return the property. However, beforehand, Bezin will get involved and make sure that the purchase gets consummated by the rightful buyer.
This presentation has been brought to you by the Orthodox Union in conjunction with the Beis Chabad Institute of Talmudic Law, the Center for the Study and Practice of Monetary Halacha.